listener production.
Hi, and welcome back to Broadsheet Melbourne Around Town. I'm Publications Director Nick Connellan. Joining us today are Hannah Fox and Gideon Obazanek, the co-artistic directors of Winter Arts Festival Rising. Welcome.
Hi, Nick.
So the festival's coming up in June, June 1 to June 16. And this year you've designed the schedule a little bit differently, right?
Yeah, there's much more of a focus on the weekends. And we've really tried to take the work out of it for people. It's such a big program, so broad, so diverse, that we've kind of packaged it up. So it's a little bit simpler to navigate, and particularly for people coming from other cities that they're able to kind of clearly see a way in through a weekend program. There's the long weekend, which is in the middle of the festival, the King's Birthday weekend. That's really particularly stacked. So we can talk through that a bit if you'd like.
Great. I'd love to hear about that. Why don't we start there?
Yeah, sure. So the program's quite heavily focused around Melbourne Town Hall this time. We've got a number of venues that sit around that, the Capitol Theatre, Max Watts House of Music, as well as, you know, extending out into Arts Precinct and beyond. But in the Town Hall, in the central weekend, we've got a program called Day Tripper. And that really is about like handing the reins to us to curate a day out for you. It's a mixture of music, dance, visual art, film, all happening across a city block under one single ticket. And then beyond that, it's going to be fun. And there's a couple of cinema events as well that sit across that weekend that cross over into music. But it's about trying to bring those art forms together. I think that's what Rising does. It is, I guess, quite different from many other festivals. Being able to see contemporary dance right up against Yasin Bey or Asha Puthley, a Indian disco diva. So there's that kind of, you know, mixture of known quantities and a sense of discovery as well.
Yeah, nice. And who else is on the program at Day Tripper?
Oh, so many. There's a band called Memorials that I'm particularly excited about. That's made up of previous members of Electrolane and The Wire. They're really it's hard to describe, but quite cinematic music. They'll be working with the Town Hall organ as well. There's Jay Lynn, who's a, you know, absolutely prolific DJ, techno maker. He's originally from Ohio, based in New York now. She's worked with kind of anyone you could think of, really, from like Lou Reed through to, you know, some Dr. Dre at one point. It's like quite an amazing crossover there. But her new record, a lot of it is in collaboration with Philip Glass. So it's got a sort of more gentle ambient feel. And Asha Puthley, who I mentioned before, I'm particularly excited about. She's a 79-year-old Indian disco queen. She really cut her teeth in Studio 54. She's had a career that spanned five decades since. And now she's playing Rising and then going on to Glastonbury Festival. And it's such a big show, a really big, fun show. So we're absolutely excited for that.
Awesome. Yeah. I'm excited to hear you mention the Town Hall organ as well. For people who haven't experienced it, it's almost like a religious experience, like when all of that fires up and you can feel the deep bass notes in your body and it just fills the space. It's so incredible there.
Yeah, it's when you see a person actually playing it, they're so dwarfed by the instrument that they're operating. It's kind of incredible to see. And it's very physical. You know, they're using their both arms and legs to operate this giant, you know, mechanical machine. And what is really fascinating about that particular organ is that it's been MIDI mapped so that people can use it as an instrument in recording. I think that's the only case of that in the world. So
yeah, I think it's one of the only ones in the world, and you can, from anywhere in the world, you can sample it, but you can also give instructions to play it. So someone can play it on your behalf from anywhere on the planet, which is amazing.
Wow. My mind just went to, so Fred again was just in town and, you know, there was all those clips of him on his little MPC kind of drum machine triggering MIDI samples. I'm like, why hasn't anyone got Fred again on the Melbourne Town Hall organ?
Oh, that's some good programming idea, Nick. We'll get on to it.
And Night Trade is running as well around the corner, right? Is that going to be an always on thing? Like it'll be
Night Trade is our kind of the festival's social hub, the festival hub. Last year it was in St. Paul's Cathedral car park, and this time we're working in a really interesting site, which is directly across the road from the town hall. There's the Capitol Theatre, and underneath the Capitol is a whole series of kind of connected arcades and laneways that are all undercover, and then that connects into the back of Max Watts Club. So all of that will be programmed and alive with, you know, bars and all sorts of interesting things like art classes and dance classes and DJs and video projection and a whole layer of program. And it's open Thursday to Sunday across the 3 weeks.
Yeah, cool. Speaking of St. Paul's Cathedral, last year you had some really great ethereal works in there, kind of making use of that churchy space. And this year you've gone in a bit of a different route. You're going to have Shouse, the electronic duo behind that massive song, Love Tonight. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So Shouse had a kind of accidental dance global hit during the pandemic. They're two Melbourne musicians who put out a song, Love Tonight, I think in 2019. It did the rounds of Triple R and all of that. And then the pandemic hit and they actually shut down all their social media accounts and just, you know, got on with their lives basically and their normal jobs as primary school teachers and town planning and that sort of thing. And they later on, a few months later, they were alerted to by a friend that their song was hitting in the millions of streams and they had no idea what was going on. It had been picked up by this Estonian DJ and it became this kind of anthem for coming out of the pandemic, this anthem of togetherness. And they were kind of really interested into the why, you know, and this it spread all over the world. It's now at over a billion streams. And they were trying to understand, like, what is it about this song that's really resonating with people? And their conclusion was it was about this kind of group singing that is in the recording of the song and this kind of anthem opportunity. And so they wanted to dig into that some more. And they've got this project called Communitas. And that's about bringing people together to be part of making music. It's this kind of decentralized idea of music making. You know, originally, you know, in churches and in, you know, cultural festivals, there wasn't such a clear line between performer and audience. You know, in the folk tradition, everyone's involved. And so they're trying to bring that kind of spirit by building this, you know, traveling music school in a sense. They're working with kids and families all over the city to build up this concert that will take place in Rising in St. Paul's Cathedral in the last weekend. And there'll be around 1,000 people involved in that, and absolutely everyone is in the band. Everyone will be part of that music making experience. They're going to record that concert and then split the proceeds with everyone who participates. So it's a quite radical and generous idea. Part of it's about them bringing their success home, but part of it's also just about digging into their own curiosity about why that kind of group singing resonates so strongly with people. And I think especially in, you know, more secular kind of communities where the opportunity for that is often at football games or places outside of festivals and churches.
That's fascinating because, yeah, for people who haven't heard the song, it is very, it sounds like an enormous choir of not trained singers kind of just belting it out. It's got that vibe to it.
It was their mates in a club in Northcote.
No way.
Yeah, that's how it was recorded.
And so that's at St. Paul's Cathedral, as you said. Let's talk about some of the other regions that the festival's kind of hitting up, or the districts, or whatever we want to call them.
Yeah, well, I mean, let's go to the river because I think that's a really big part of the festival. So back in 2020, when COVID was kind of, you know, really hit the whole country, hit the whole world, we couldn't go ahead. So we asked people, artists, for big ideas when nothing was going on. And Deborah Cheatham and Byron Scullin approached us with The Rivers Sing, which was a really big project. We did it in 21. And unfortunately, there was a big shutdown of the whole state during that time. So that festival didn't last particularly long. I think it lasted a day. Luckily, that work was able to go on, but it was only for people living within a 5 kilometer radius. And since then, we've received so much fantastic feedback about that huge sound art project along the river. We've decided to bring it back. And for those people who are not familiar with it, really sound and music comes from everywhere. It's the sky is singing and the earth is talking. And this incredible recording that keeps changing every night, by Deborah Cheatham and Byron Scullin, really sings out to kilometres, literally to suburbs, through these incredible speakers that are designed to send voice to a very, very long distance. And so really for us, it's a ritual that happens every sunset to really usher in the beginning of the festival evening. And it's free, and people gather, invite people to gather at sunset around the river. So from there, the festival literally moves in, inside to Federation Square, and we go into another large free event called the Black Infinite.
Yeah, so the Black Infinite is curated by Kimberly Moulton. She's a senior curator with Rising, a Yorta Yorta woman, and she curated Shadow Spirit last year for us, an absolutely beautiful show that
around blockbuster.
Yeah, like 35,000 people came through Flinders Street Station to see that work. And we're so proud of it. This year she's working with Kate Ten Boon, who's the lead First Peoples curator at Federation Square. And Rising and MAPCO and Fed Square are all partnering together to put on this big public free work. The thematics they're working with are quite interesting. They're looking at ideas of aliens, alienation, otherness, invasive species, space colonization. They're kind of pulling at all these threads of, you know, the cosmos, essentially. And that'll play out in a whole number of ways. There'll be a really big free video mapping of the whole square with, you know, artistic storytelling through that medium. There's also a whole public program. So Richard Bell's Embassy, which is a kind of homage, I guess, to the original Aboriginal tent embassy in Canberra, will sit in the middle of the square. And there's a whole series of talks across 3 weekends that will happen in there. So the kind of themes for that are around treaty, constitution, Aboriginal prosperity. They're really quite rich and interesting themes. And he co-curates that with Kimberly to bring in a whole lot of speakers across those weekends. And then there's a whole layer of film. They're working with Tony Albert as well, who's an incredible artist. They're doing some, I believe, alien making workshops with kids.
4 kids.
Yeah. it's a super layered program in Federation Square, but we're really excited about bringing some of that work that Kimberly has been doing really into the public realm at big scale.
Yeah, because the Flinders Street, as you said, was a blockbuster with 35,000 people, but it was behind closed doors still.
Yeah, it was, you know, it's just limited by nature of the building that there's only a certain amount of people that can go through at a time. So we saw the demand and the response to that show and how much interest there was. So we just wanted to scale that up.
Yeah, and it was a ticketed event, Shadow Spirit. So this is really Kimberly shifting across to free public art, which I think is really exciting. And from that, we move deeper into the city. So for the opening weekend at Melbourne Town Hall, which we're really focusing on, will be Big Name No Blankets. That's a collaboration between Ilbidgeri and the family and community from Papunya, from the Central Desert, really about the life of the Wurrumbi Band. So the Wurrumbi Band was this really big hit Aboriginal band in the late 70s to the mid 80s. And they were the first kind of rock band, Aboriginal rock band, to sing in language. And they really influenced a whole lot of Aboriginal rock music that came after them. And so this is this show takes on like kind of a concert form. It's basically like a rock band doing a concert. But all of those players are really fantastic storytellers. So it breaks into storytelling, and we see the arc from these young teenagers from Papunya forming a band and becoming famous and then traveling nationally and then internationally. And you see that whole arc. So it's a really great show for the opening weekend.
A band of a similar vintage that I'm so excited about is Tanarawin, which is, they have the craziest origin story. So they're kind of that psych rock band from Mali. They've been around since 1979. They've been nominated for several Grammys, and they were formed against the backdrop of civil war. At age 4, the lead guitarist witnessed his own father's execution, and then later on he saw someone playing a guitar in a Western movie, and built his own guitar out of a plastic water can and some fishing wire. It's just like you couldn't make this up. Mm. And that's how he started playing guitar and kind of eventually became the lead of this world famous band. How did you get these guys, and have they been on the list for a while?
They've been on the list since day dot, so I'm very happy that they're finally coming. Yeah, as you say, their story is fascinating, and they're just such prolific, virtuosic musicians. And I would say it's almost more of a music tradition than just a band. There's been multiple generations of Tuareg musicians who've moved through Dunarawan over time. There's really young players. There's some who've been there since the very beginning. And it's coming from this very mixed tradition of Algerian music, African music, blues, kind of hypnotic, I think they describe it as desert groove. And they've played in so many different contexts. That's what I find really fascinating about their career now. You know, they opened the FIFA World Cup in South Africa. You know, they've played massive stadium shows with the Rolling Stones. And then they've also recorded with Kurt Vile, you know. So they kind of reach into all of these different communities, but they're just so profound to watch them play live. I've seen them a couple of times. I've been lucky enough to. And them in the Forum is just a dream come true.
Yeah. They don't sing in English, do they? I've never heard any of their songs in English.
No, they sing in multiple, they're all multilingual, something that as Australians we are always
astounded by. Yeah.
Astounded by. But they mostly, a large part of the music is instrumental, but there's often that kind of trilling style vocal that plays over the top. But I'd really recommend going and checking out their most recent release. It's fantastic. It's on heavy rotation in my house.
Yeah, I love them. I think I discovered them maybe only about 5 or 10 years ago, but yeah, big fan. Who else is on your bucket list? Are there names that you've kind of, as you said, identified from day dot and still chasing?
I mean, for me, Dirty Three is a big one. I think being a festival that's from and about Melbourne but connected to the world is kind of what the balance we're always trying to strike. And Dirty Three represent that really strongly. Like their musical lineage is quite fascinating. You know, if you look at the three members of that band, you know, they reach into all sorts of aspects of music. Obviously Warren with Nick Cave, but, you know, Jim White and Mick as well are just prolific musicians that connect to a whole scene, you know, around the world and here. And it's the first time in 14 years that they've played a headline show in Melbourne. You know, their first show, I think, was in Richmond in 1992. And I don't think anyone could have guessed that three kind of scruffy-looking dudes playing instrumental music with a pickup on a violin would become, you know, a lasting global sensation in the way that they have. And their fans are just devout. It is kind of a religious experience, I think, you know. Lots of, even just seeing the ticket buying, like lots of people going to both shows, which tells you a lot about the kind of commitment to seeing them live. But the bucket list is long and deep. And yeah, it's so much about timing of often, I think.
Yeah, and it's not just bucket list. Like often we are looking at shows and artists who are incredibly recent, and just seeing like what is happening right now. Often things that we haven't actually even come across, you know, over a period of time, but have just come on recently. So I would say Meat Warlop's One Song from Europe, which is a big show.
Can you talk about that? That is the craziest show.
Yeah, so One Song, it's a hard one to describe because it doesn't really sit in any kind of art form or genre, but I can probably best describe it as a music squad, a band, basically in a competition with themselves, trying to play this pop song over and over while being challenged on really challenging sporting equipment. And so it's a kind of a thing that begins as a concert and becomes a sporting event. It's like watching the Olympics sort of gymnastics. Imagine that while they're a rock band playing a song on apparatus. And it's sort of hilarious and odd. And one thing I really loved when I experienced it recently last year was that the audience begins as a kind of an arts audience. They're looking, they're listening, and then they just start moving, they start cheering, they start just becoming very passionate about wanting these people to get to the finishing line. So it's an odd work in that way, but I think it's one of those things that I noticed that really brings people together. And it's on the last weekend at the Melbourne Town Hall.
Yeah. Where's Dirty Three playing, by the way? We didn't cover that.
Oh, Hamer Hall. Yeah, two shows in Hamer Hall. And we may even announce a third. We'll see how we go.
Nice.
Yeah.
Gideon, can you tell us a bit about dance? That's kind of your background, formerly of Chunky Move, and they're doing a show.
Yeah. So, yeah, I came definitely from a pretty strong dance background. And I have to say, you know, and this is, I don't think I'm biased in saying that we have some extraordinary choreographers and certainly some great dancers in Australia. Like, I've traveled a lot and you always find amazing dancers in, you know, various groups and ensembles and companies around the world, and so many of them are Australian. So I don't know why that is. I don't know why we tend to train a lot of dancers here so well, but we do. And we've been really fortunate this year. We've got five dance productions from around Australia. I won't go into all the details of all of them, but they're all really amazing. They're all actually really new. Three of them are premieres, and the other two are just very recent premieres of other festivals we've been in partnerships with. So Chunky Move has a new show, You Beauty. And I think what's really extraordinary about this experience is that you're invited into it, an inflatable with the dancers. So you're like really on a fly on the wall inside this very strange and intimate world that's going on in the Immigration Museum. And I think that's one of the exciting things about the festival, is that you can see things that are somewhat familiar but in a very different light. Mm-hmm. And that's a very exciting show. Melanie Lane, another great choreographer, doing a new work, Arcadia, at the Substation. And also Lucy Guerin Inc., doing a new intimate work called One Single Action. That's really fantastic. Two extraordinary performers, and a hammer, and a glass sphere. I won't tell you. I think you can guess what might be happening in this show.
Before we sign off, any other highlights that you feel like people should really know about?
I might mention some of the works by Jeremy Deller. Jeremy is a British conceptual artist. He won the Turner Prize. He's represented the UK twice in the Venice Biennale. And he's a quite interesting artist. He doesn't really make things. He makes things happen, is the way he describes it. And we've got three projects with him. One is called Acid Brass. On its face, it's a quite simple idea. It's traditional brass bands playing acid house music. But he's really, what sits behind that is this kind of drawing the lines between social history and political history and music. So he was looking at the fall of industry in the UK around kind of Thatcher era Britain and the rise of rave culture in those very same factories. And he's drawn this incredible mind map that tracks, you know, all of this kind of rave music and how it crosses over with steel drums, brass bands, etc. So brass bands will be processing the streets during the festival and popping up on stages and the town hall portico and all sorts of places. There's also a project called 24-Hour Rock Show that Jeremy has curated, and that's from midday to midday, 24 hours of music documentaries. And the kind of criteria, I guess, for curating them is around music that was made in the moment, so music film that was made in the moment. He's not looking at the kind of documentaries where you've got Bono sitting on a couch reflecting on yesteryear. It's about, you know, great filmmakers who happened to be there when music was really having an effect, you know, a cultural phenomenon effect. So it's an incredible collection. Some of them are really well known, like Gimme Shelter, and some of them are very, very obscure. And they vary in length from feature films to 5-minute little pieces that we've found in the National Film and Sound Archive. So for those who are really into film and really into music, 24 hours of that in Capitol Theatre, which is entirely free. You can just drop in and out as you please. And that sits kind of at the centre of that middle weekend of Day Tripper and a whole bunch of other shows happening across town.
I can't wait for that. I just love how the city's activated and just getting out there and just feeling like, yeah, you're part of this great city.
Yeah, and that you can, you know, enter in through one doorway and end up somewhere else entirely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, Rising runs from June 1 to June 16 this year. Jump online, get your tickets. You've got a great website, by the way. It's very handy, very easy to navigate. So I would urge people to do that.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
It's cheers. Pleasure.
That's it for today. If you're enjoying the podcast, tell your friends and family, leave us a review, and keep listening. Subscribe or follow us wherever you're listening now to make sure that you don't miss an episode.
Listener.